I'm John, a compulsive overeater, and I really appreciate getting this when I walked into the room this morning. I think that I was born a compulsive overeater, and as a result of that disease, became a morbidly obese teenager and young adult until I came into these rooms 40 years ago. And when I was that practicing compulsive overeater, I desperately wanted to be thin so I could get laid. And my dreams have come true. Now if I could just learn how to spell, everything would be perfect. So, you know, as I mentioned, I have been in OA for about 40 years. And unlike Lauren, I wasn't given the instructions to talk about my spiritual journey in this program. I was just asked if I would be willing to lead, but that's okay because my recovery really is a spiritual journey. I believe. The literature says at the very first meeting we attended, we learned that we were in the clutches of a dangerous illness and that willpower, emotional health, and self-confidence, which some of us at once possessed, were no defense against it. In Voices of Recovery on May 8th, it says, the only defense I have against the disease of compulsive overeating is a spiritual one. After years in the program, after weight loss, after learning and practicing healthy eating habits, after discovering better ways to react to life's changes, I must continue to search for and accept guidance from a higher power. How many times have I fallen for the mistaken notion that after a few days or months or years of successful eating and living, I can again take charge of my life? I've learned the hard way by successive relapses and humiliations that no matter how much better I look, act, or feel, God must always be in charge of my life. My continued recovery depends on the continual maintenance and growth of my spiritual condition that hasn't changed from the day I set foot in my first OA meeting, and it never will. My story is not unique in this program, but it may not be the typical one either, or the most frequent one of people coming into these rooms with battling a yo-yo syndrome of gaining weight, losing it, gaining weight, losing it. And that was not my story. I only gained. My yo-yo was broken. It only yoked. And so from a very early age, I was significantly overweight, and the older I got, the more significantly overweight I got, until when I came into these rooms in my mid-20s, 40 years ago, I was 485 pounds. It wasn't 485 pounds in holding, it was 485 pounds and still going. I felt such a relief walking into my first meeting because in this small town in Northern Virginia, there were a room full of women that had the same disease that I had, the same problem that I had. And up until that time, I really thought that I was the only one that had this problem. Maybe three or four other people in the country, but other than that, it was just me. And here, in a small town, there was a church basement full of women that had the same issue, and that just felt like such a relief. The other thing that felt like such a relief at that first meeting was to know that this was a disease, to find out for the first time that this was a disease. It wasn't my fault. It was no more my fault than if I had cancer or some other disease. It just was life on life terms, and I just happened to be blessed with this disease. So that felt like just such a huge relief to me. This was a relatively new group, and nobody there had any experience with 12-step recovery. So, we read the literature, we read what it said, but nobody really understood 12-step recovery. And in hindsight, as a, what I came to understand is what the big book talks about, is that half measures availed us nothing. You know, and so we were talking about the program a little bit, but none of us were living the program, and as a result, none of us were recovering. But we did have each other, and you know, we had, you know, some touchstone to learn about this disease and learn about the recovery. And where things changed for me was a couple months into a program. The Washington D.C. Intergroup was putting on a retreat in the wilds of West Virginia, the small church camp called Buffalo Gap. There were three people at that meeting that were going to go to that retreat, and they really twisted my arm to go. And to this day, I really don't know, were they going and just wanted a fourth for the car, or were they saying, you know, John needs to go, and maybe if we go, we can get him to go with us. You know, and I honestly don't know if that wasn't their rationale for going. But they really twisted my arm, and I was very resistant. I did not want to go. You know, it cost $30 for the weekend. I didn't have $30 that I wanted to spend, you know, going to West Virginia for a retreat. But they just wouldn't let up. They really, just encouraged me and twisted my arm until I finally said, okay, I'll go. And that saved my life. We drove into that church camp, and one of the first things I saw just pissed me off, because there was this short, skinny guy walking across the lawn with this blonde, and I was just pissed, because there were only supposed to be compulsive overeaters here, and somebody went and brought their husband. You know, what the hell was he doing here? So I kind of came into the church camp with an attitude. And had a wonderful, you know, Friday evening. We did a lot of fun things and had some meetings, and it was wonderful, a good start. And the first session of Saturday morning was on the first three steps, and I said, okay, well, I probably should go to that one. That sounds good. And lo and behold, it was being led by a short, skinny guy who had not always been skinny, but had always been short. He shared his disease, and I understood that he and I had the same disease, but something had changed in him. And I had already, in those few hours, had heard and seen other people who shared their stories as well, that they still talked about being a compulsive overeater, that they still had this disease, but something had changed in them. I began to have some hope as a result of that. And so really in that hour and a half session, I took the first three steps at a gut level. I mean, I hadn't denied from the first meeting that I was a compulsive overeater, that I was powerless over food. I was twice as big as anybody else in that room. But I accepted it as a gut level that Saturday morning. I said, oh, you know, I never, ever have had the ability to control eating. And I accepted the fact that I never, ever would. So I just, you know, took step one at a gut level. And because I saw recovery that weekend, I believed that I took step two. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore even me to sanity. Maybe I wasn't hopeless. And I surrendered, and I took step three. And I said, it wasn't this kind of defiant thing to God. It was, God, I understand that I have this disease. I believe, you know, that I can't recover on my own. I see recovery this weekend, and I think that you might be able to do it, and I just give this to you, and we'll see. I can't say that I said it with a tremendous amount of confidence. It really was, I give this to you, and we'll see. I think you can do it. I hope you can, and if you can't, I can't. And that was a powerful experience for me. My life changed. I didn't have a sense I could do this for the rest of my life. I didn't have the sense that I could do it for as long as it would take me to lose the excess weight. I didn't know that I could do it for the rest of the weekend. But for the first time in my life, I believed that I didn't have to take the first compulsive bite today. You know, that was a miracle. You know, I'd never had that feeling or understanding before. Things changed for me. You know, I just started going to a meeting every day, you know, and I was living on the outskirts of Washington, D.C., and I would drive wherever it took to get to a, you know, meeting. And if I drove an hour, I would drive an hour. Not every meeting was that long, but some were. You know, I'd drive more than an hour on occasion. That's 5? 10. Ooh! Okay. You know, it was like a drown, you know, like a man dying of thirst, and I just wanted that fire hose. You know, I couldn't get enough of this program. You know, and I didn't, when I came in spite of the fact of having obviously severe physical consequences of this disease, there was nothing else wrong in my life. You know, nothing else needed to change. You know, I just had a little problem with weight. Other than that, everything was perfect. You know, and I can remember, you know, probably 6 months in, driving to a meeting one night, and saying, "Holy crap!" In spite of nothing needing to change when I came in, with the exception that I had the same car and I lived in the same apartment and I had the same job, everything in my life had changed. Simply because I began to do what was suggested that I might do if I wanted to recover, and by following those suggestions, which were the 12 steps, my life had changed, and changed for the better. I mean, I very much appreciated what I had. You know, relapse is a part of my story. I do not, you know, suggest that if you have not experienced relapse or you're not in relapse right now, that you ought to go do it, because it is a really shitty place. And that I have been extremely blessed to come into this program in the beginning and extremely blessed to have recovered from relapse, a number of relapses over the years. But I also am very much aware of people that I sat in rooms with that I felt, man, these people just have their act together, they're doing wonderful, and took that first bite and have not made it back to my knowledge. I have died in the disease. I, you know, believe I have another relapse in me. I don't know. I can't guarantee I have another recovery. I believe that I would never, ever stop asking for abstinence. Till the day I die, I believe whether I'm abstinent or in relapse, I would every morning say, "Please, God, make me abstinent." But I also believe that if I'm in relapse, I may very well say, "God, please make me abstinent again tomorrow." And I can die saying, "God, please make me abstinent tomorrow." You know, my life has changed as a result of this program. You know, I certainly have, you know, all sorts of different attitudes, beliefs, you know, different life than I would have had, you know, without the program. You know, I guess I would touch a little bit on, you know, relapse. You know, what happened? I had a marvelous recovery. You know, physically, you know, I had maintained a 300-pound weight loss for a number of years. Spiritually, I had a spiritual awakening as a result of this, you know, program. Emotionally, I had emotional health. You know, I really had a wonderful, you know, recovery as a result of this program. And when I went back into relapse, you know, there was a tremendous penalty for, you know, for that. I didn't stop believing in God, but the connection with my higher power just was very much impaired. It wasn't anything that God did. You know, it was that food. I was putting food between that, you know, me and God. And it just, you know, it just impaired that, you know, connection. You know, I talked about coming into my first meeting and just such a relief. Oh, it wasn't my fault, you know, that I had a disease. You know, I had, I had come to understand that in the disease, before I came into this program, I was insane. You know, I would not have believed that, would not have accepted that at my first meeting. But for years in recovery, you know, when I recognized the insanity was that my life was that I was going to go on this diet Monday and lose the weight. And the insanity was that I believed it. There wasn't a shred of evidence to think that something might change on Monday. That's five? Okay, all right. 15, all right, okay. You know, there wasn't a shred of evidence to think that something might change on Monday, but I knew that things were going to be different on Monday. That was insane. I talked about that in meetings for years. In relapse, doesn't matter that intellectually I know that's crap. My addiction said, I'll just eat today and I'll get abstinent tomorrow. That's insane. You know, doesn't matter that I knew it was insane. I still did what an addict did. I still practiced what an addict, you know, if I'm back in the addiction, I think and act like an addict. I had prided myself on rigorous honesty in recovery, and that was not a part of my life before the program. I had prided myself on rigorous honesty. In relapse, I didn't want to be dishonest. I became, in my own mind, a master of misdirection. You know, I tried not to lie, but push comes to shove. If I had to lie because of my disease, I would lie. You know, all the things that I valued, you know, if I'm practicing my addiction, you know, go out the window. You know, shame was a part of that. It's part of the fact that intellectually I know that this is a disease. It's not my fault. It doesn't matter. If I'm back into the food, part and parcel of my disease for me is I feel intense shame. Just, it comes with the territory. I shouldn't. You know, I have a disease. Doesn't matter. I feel like shit, and a big part of that is the shame that I feel. I should know better. You know, I, in relapse, I tell myself things that I would never, ever tell anyone else. I would never say to anyone else the things that I call myself in this disease. You know, and in, you know, relapse, of just waking up in the morning, looking in the mirror and saying, you dumb shit. You did it again. How could you do that? You know, that's just what happens, you know, with me. I don't want to do that. And kind of what happened, part two, you know, to get out of relapse. You know, what happens that I had to be honest with somebody. You know, it really, you know, wasn't a, you know, couldn't have been a surprise to the people in meetings that had seen me gain weight. You know, that they knew what was happening. But, you know, according to me, verbally, it was, I'm having a little trouble, but, you know, it's better, I'm better, and, you know, all the things that we tell ourselves, or try and tell other people or whatever. And to recover again, what I had to do was to be honest with someone, and then I had to also be honest with people in the meetings. You know, I had to go to my home groups, you know, and say, you know, it's not a surprise to anybody here, but I've been back in the food, or I am back in the food. And that was really, you know, the first step on the path back to, you know, to freedom. You know, I also, you know, had to, you know, part of staying in recovery is that you know, I can't talk about, you know, I was honest in sharing my program. You know, the things that I would share were honest, but it really may have been honestly sharing what happened or what I was doing 10 years ago, not what was going on with me today. You know, and so really the important thing of sharing is, you know, kind of what am I dealing with today? What's going on, you know, today? And the 10 years ago might be nice, or 40 years ago, you know, might be of interest or whatever. And that certainly has a place in what we share in this program. But, you know, it's probably more beneficial for me and maybe more beneficial for you to talk about what's going on with me today. The other thing that I had to do when I got back, and the other thing that I realized from my very first meeting is that this would be a program that I would be in for the rest of my life. Through recovery and relapse, I never left. There were periods of time that I did not meet the qualifications for membership in this program, which is having a desire to stop eating compulsively, because I didn't. I thought about eating on my way to meetings. I thought about eating during meetings, and I ate on my way home from meetings. But I believed the answer was here, so I never left. I kept coming back. I believed that I would hear what I needed to hear when I was ready to hear it. And that's, you know, what, you know, happened. But kind of what got me back into recovery from my last relapse about 4 years ago was, that I was in an area that meetings did not have the strength that I needed or was looking for at the time. I was really struggling, and what I had to be willing to do was to get some outside help at that point, because I wasn't finding it in the meetings that I was going to, you know. And what I prayed before meeting the person that was to help me, was, God, please let me be compliant. Please help me be willing to be compliant and just, listen to what she is going to tell me and just be willing to, to do it. And, that was a big part of getting me back into, recovery. I guess I would close the, it is so gratitude is important for me. I don't believe that I would be alive today had OA not found me 40 years ago. I certainly was not living a life that was conducive to old age. And just as when I got abstinent for the first time at that retreat at Buffalo Gap, it was just this intense gratitude of, oh, thank you, God. And, I can remember after relapses of trying to get abstinent, struggling, failure day after day after day. And finally, that first day of abstinence again, of going to bed at night and saying, oh, God, thank you. Just this overwhelming sense of gratitude. If I can just keep in touch with that, remember, what it's like in the disease, what it was like for me. But also, it was that first day of abstinence was an absolute miracle. This thing that I had tried and worked for and wasn't able to do, all of a sudden was this gift that was given to me. Just this overwhelming sense of, oh, God, that was nothing I did, but something magical just happened today. What a miracle. And going to bed at night saying, oh, thank you. The fact that for, probably 4 years now, I've had that doesn't make today any less of a miracle. That is still a very miraculous event. And the more that I can really recall that and just say thank you, God. It helps me to continue to be here. So really, pleased to have the opportunity to share. Appreciate all the work that went into to the retreat, and thank you.